Canada.
So, that means I'm from Canada. Where are you from? So, we have been looking at missions this month, and we're going to keep looking at missions. Whoops. Let's just go back. But it's easy to lose sight of the fact that missions is about who we are as people. It's not just about places, and it's not just about people who may have enough or not have enough or be in a tight spot or not be in a tight spot. It's really about community. And so I want you to look this morning when we are looking at the Haiti mission as this being our community. And what we're doing is we're extending community Pine Grove to Metaguez and Metaguez to Pine Grove. Because it goes both ways. You know, have you ever been in a community where it just goes one way? Doesn't last very long. Because that's more about transfers than about community. So I want to encourage you to start thinking and praying about Metaguez the way, and Haiti, the way you would think about those people who are coming to Sunday dinner or maybe Christmas dinner or maybe Easter dinner. Just try to get your head around that when you think about missions, because it's about extending that community, and I think that's what God and Jesus are asking us to do out of Acts 1:8, and so that's where we're going to start. In Acts 1:8, and, you know, I was looking at this in the Bible, and I was asking Janet, I said, oh, yeah, you know that place where it's the Great Commission, and Jesus says to send out all of the people and go out to all those places. Which gospel is that in? And it's not in the Gospels. It's actually in Acts. So Acts is the continuation of, it's continuation of the early church. And these are the very, very last words that are recorded that Jesus says. And Jesus says, but you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and to the ends of the earth. Now, I don't know how good your geography is, but my geography is not that good, and I had no idea what he was talking about. So I did a little research, and it turns out there's a direct translation in the Bible that says Jerusalem equals Jasmine Crescent and the Gloucester Emergency Food Cupboard. Judea is the Ottawa Inner City Missions Ministry. Samaria is all of Ontario and Canada, and the ends of the earth are Uruguay and Haiti. So, we have our marching orders. The last thing Jesus said is, get out there. And once you leave those doors, you're in the mission field. Whether you're at your school, whether you're at home, whether you're at work, whether you're going downtown and you're sort of saving your pennies so you can buy a sleeping bag for inner city missions, or you're thinking about what you can do in the rest of Canada, Uruguay, or today we're going to look at Haiti. And we're doing some really exciting things in Haiti because they are part of our community. So I'm going to take you back just a little bit to show you how far we have come. And Danny's already made reference to this, and we did not plan this ahead. This was the poverty boot camp that says, you know what? As human beings, you think those people in Haiti are poor? We should look here to see who's poor. We are all poor since the fall. And the reason that we're poor is that we have broken relationships. And those broken relationships make us poor in different ways. We may not be materially poor because we kind of won the lottery on that one, but we are in broken relationships. And that's why when we have a problem and, you know, we get an invitation from Jesus Christ to say, I want to be Lord of your life. You know, I'm at the door and I'm knocking. If you open the door, I'll come into your life. And you'd say, no, I'm kind of busy right now. I'm cleaning out the fridge. Okay? That's a broken relationship. It's a broken relationship with God. And sometimes the broken relationships are with humans. And I don't know if you're in any close relationships like you have a boss or you are the boss and you have employees or you're a teacher and you have students or you're a student and you have teachers or you have a spouse or you have kids or any of those close relationships. Have you figured out how to hit people's hot buttons? Okay. Okay. So you know you shouldn't say that, but it's just too tempting. You push the button, and voila, you get the reaction, and that's a broken relationship. Because you know that that momentary sense of gratitude that you push somebody's hot button is going to cause you 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years of grief. That's a broken relationship. With yourself, does anybody have any problems with self-doubt, self-esteem, self-love, self-care? That's a broken relationship. And finally, with creation, you just have to look around, and we haven't been doing all that great a job of caring for the creation. That's a broken relationship. But Jesus says that we can get those back. And Jesus said, you know what? I'm going to die on the cross for you, and you're going to have a chance to get those back. You're going to have an invitation from me to get those back. And you're going to be able to get out of those broken relationships, and you're going to get into a new broken relationship. You're going to have a chance to get out of poverty if you accept my invitation. And so if we accept this invitation, we don't receive the harsh justice of God, which would be to judge us for our sins, but we actually get these reconciled relationships, and we suddenly have a relationship with God. We can contemplate having wholesome, rich relationships with human beings. We can have a sense of worth. We are created in the image of God. And so we have every reason to believe that the battle's already won. We don't have to worry about self-doubt because we have a God who has created us. And finally, we can start getting it right and have a relationship with creation. I'm not sure this is a direct result, but I think that means you should buy a plot in the community garden next year. Anyway, so we have this chance to have a relationship with a God who says, I love you, I died for you, why don't you come and be, as Danny said, one of my children? And you know what? You get the whole enchilada. I'll give you everything. Your choice. So, just to give you a sense that I'm not making this up, there are this beautiful provision, passage in Colossians that said, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. That's how he did it. That's how we're back in the game. And that's how we have a chance of having a reconciled relationship with God, self, creation, and others. But it does take a certain kind of orientation. It kind of takes a bit of humility. And it kind of takes a bit of vulnerability. And it kind of takes a little bit of okay, I understand that in relationships, there's a sense of community. There's give, there's take, there's being, and there's continuing. And I think this really, this particular passage says it all. Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. It is the source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose or deeper and more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path. So what it says to me is that if I want to be in community, I have to understand community. And that posture that I have to come is a sense of I'm vulnerable, and I can tell you maybe that it's not all going great, or that maybe I'm not the greatest person, or maybe I have a few warts, and that's okay. And if you have that orientation, you are ready to fasten your seatbelt and get into extending community. And I think what happens then is if you go and you do extend community, whether it's at the Christmas table with that uncle that you really detest seeing every year, or whether it's with somebody that's far away in Uruguay or in Haiti, you'll get a sense that there's this exchange, that you will be mutually transformed in the sense that you'll be giving something, you'll be getting something. And so one of the graphs that Food for the Hungry has developed, which is called mutual transformation, working and learning from each other, is in the developed community. Developed usually in the economic sense means we got cash, and we got trinkets, and we got stuff, iPhones, I see, I do. So we have all of those. And so we're very, very developed on the material side. We got lots of stuff. But then socially, yeah, we've got, social media, and we can contact a lot of people and tell them that there's nothing wrong with our lives. Just look at my Instagram. Everything is perfect. Do you ever see anybody show their garbage can on Instagram? No. None of that. So, I only ever live on mountaintops, and so socially, we're pretty developed. Emotionally, we have the ability and often the cash to hide some of our deep emotional fears and insufficiencies. So, you know, I'm feeling bad, but it is Black Friday, so I can go buy some things, feel better. Spiritually, maybe we're doing okay, maybe not. Relationally, maybe even less. Take away all of the trinkets. How are we doing with those relationships? Conversely, sometimes, and these are just general generalizations, but sometimes in the developing community, it's exactly the opposite. Very low in material possessions. But on the other side, socially, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, we find that there's much greater depth in those particular communities. And I have a really funny one, and Jeremy's here, and I'm going to be talking a bit about Jeremy in a minute. Jeremy and I have had a great relationship the last 10, 15 years, and one of the things that Food for the Hungry puts out is a country profile. They work in 18 countries, places that they say the hard places on the planet. And Haiti is one of the hard places on the planet. And it says a sense of, it basically gives kind of a rough profile of how the country works. And the relational side is super important, and they actually put it on the fact sheet. And it says, relationally, you know, many family members live together in the same house. Haitians use an indirect style of communicating because they don't like people to take offense. But this has a very direct impact, this relational idea of living in the present. So Haitians have a flexible view of time, and you can tell me if this is dead wrong, Jeremy, but Haitians have a very flexible view of time with emphasis on the present event and the present relationship. Relationship, okay? In general, it makes much more sense to a Haitian to live fully in the present moment and activity than to be focused on some future event over which they have little control. Thus, punctuality has traditionally been seen as less important to Haitians than to Canadians. And for example, to be a half an hour late for an appointment is totally normal and would be considered on time. So, am I wrong? Jeremy, is this wrong? Is this roughly? Okay. So it's the importance of the relationship that is rich in the cultural context of the development community. And we could learn a little bit about that, you know. Marcella can come up to me and say, you know, I'm having a really hard time. I'd like to talk to you, and say, Marcella, I'd love to talk to you, but I have to run to Tim Hortons. I'll be back next week. You know, I mean, sometimes we have that kind of callous sense of timing. It's just not the right time for you to have a crisis. Okay? So... So we have something perhaps to learn by this cultural transformation that happens by doing missions. This is God's way to extend community. So let's get down to the brass tacks. Where is Haiti? What is Haiti? What are we doing in Haiti? So if you don't know where Haiti is down in the Caribbean. It's just a little sort of to the east of Florida. And it's half of a big island, and one half, the western half, is Haiti, and the eastern half is Dominican Republic. And there's a big border that goes down the center, you can see there. And where Port-au-Prince is down here on the bottom, it sort of looks like a big crocodile mouth there. If you look at the bottom jaw, Port-au-Prince, oh yeah, you've got a pointer. So here's Port-au-Prince, and that's the capital, okay? And then Cap-Haïtien and Haute-Limbé, and Limbé are up here in the north. And here is the big city is called Belle-Adère, and two little suburbs are called Ketchiman and Metaguez. And Metaguez is pronounced five different ways by six people. So pick your, it could be Metaguse or Metaguez or Metaguese, or we only found one road sign that it was actually written on, so we do know it exists. And it's kind of like a suburb. Like, how do you pronounce Gloucester? Gloucester, I mean, it could happen here too, right? So this is where the FH project is, and I'm going to come to that in a minute. But what I want you to appreciate is that Belle-Adère here is a community of communities in Haiti, and it's those communities that have their partnership with us, Pine Grove, and with Jeremy's church, the Centre Evangélique Francophone d'Ottawa. And so before we get to what we're doing in Metaguez, we're going to have to go back and hear a bit of the story about how we got to Metaguez. And I think the interesting thing is that God is always working in your life, always laying things on your heart. And so this building was God's gift to Pine Grove. And suddenly, a few years, about a decade after it was opened up, we had this opportunity for a French church to say, hey, you know what? You only use that building half the day on Sunday. How about we use it on the other half of the day? And so we entered into this relationship 15 years ago about with Jeremy's church. And Jeremy and his church use this facility in the afternoon on Sundays and on Wednesdays. And they make beautiful music in this building. They have a choir, and the building comes alive. And so, I don't know, maybe a few years after that, we started talking to Jeremy and, you know, wondered about, you know, kind of how we could be engaged in projects. And Jeremy says, well, I have this idea. We have, most of our congregation are expats from Haiti, and we have a lot of family that are still in Haiti. So how would you, you know, like to learn more about who we are and about Haiti? And so we said, yeah, that would be a great thing. And so we started talking, and the elders sort of got together, and we started talking with Jeremy. And then another thing happened, and this is how God works. Ralph, I don't know if Ralph was here this morning. He's gone. He's in there? Oh, he's with the babies. So Ralph came up to me one day and maybe some of the other elders, and he said, have you ever thought about working a day for Haiti? I thought, I don't understand the concept. So he said, no. What I mean is, think about how much money you make in a day, and you get 365 of those, and you just take all that money, and you give some of that to God. How about giving one day to Haiti? So that sounded like a cool idea. So we put out the challenge, and we said, would you like to donate one day of your salary to Haiti? And the first year we did that, in 2009, we collected over $6,000. And through connections with Jeremy said, let's figure out where we can take that to help in Haiti. And so where we went, well, we didn't go there, but we sent the money to up to northern Haiti. And we worked in two places, a Baptist church in Jeremy's hometown and a Christian university that's just a few miles out of town. So that sort of started a relationship. Then tragedy hit, boom, and we had an earthquake in Haiti, 2010. And somebody was moving people, I think it was God, moving people's hearts in this congregation. And Marg suddenly found herself going to Haiti to do reconstruction work and work in Port-au-Prince. It was after the earthquake, was it not? Medical mission. So, I mean, it was kind of like, wasn't even related to the church, but somebody, you know, God was moving in her heart, and suddenly she found herself down in Haiti. And then we had a bit more discussion, and we had some more ideas, and we had our very first reconnaissance mission. Three of us went up to look at what the money was doing in northern Haiti. And so Ron and Jeremy and I went in 2011, and we started building relationships and looking at some of the work that was done at the Baptist Church and the Christian University. And that was to lay the groundwork for a bigger project, which was going to northern Haiti. And that time, a year later, 8 of us went. So we had, if I have this right, we have Les and Danny and Ron and Gladys, Jeremy, Ben Whitmer, Marg and Marnie. Did I get that right? Okay. And so those people put on their work boots, and they were going to go down and build a library, and lo and behold, they got down there, and they found out they build relationships. Now, they built some of the library, too. But it was more important, I think, the relationships and the community that they built. And so then last year, we had our third Haiti missions trip, and that one was to Metaguez, which was down here. Now, you're probably saying, well, why did you guys chop and change? Why did you go to the north first? Why did you go to the south second? And that kind of thing. Well, you know what? Sometimes God nudges you. And I think if you read the book of Acts and you see Paul's epistles, Paul wanted to do a bunch of things in a bunch of different countries. He always wanted to see Spain. Who doesn't? But he didn't. He didn't get to because God changed his path. And so we had a change of path. And so we found out that at a certain point, it was very difficult to manage the relationship with the Baptist Church and with the Christian University because we just didn't have enough people on the ground. We didn't have enough understanding as to what that community needed and how it was going to be carried out. And we did find, through some of the work that Bob Van Noten was doing and that I was doing and now that Frank Devine is doing, that Food for the Hungry Canada had people on the ground. And they had people on the ground in Haiti. But they didn't have anybody in the north. They just had them in the middle, or kind of in the middle to the edge. So we said, well, let's explore that relationship, and maybe God is pushing us to do work in Haiti, but in another community in Haiti. And sure enough, we found that Haiti had a sense of Christian mission which aligned completely with what we wanted to do and felt God was leading us to do at Pine Grove. So let me walk you through how that mission actually works. So Food for the Hungry, it's a small not-for-profit charitable organization in Canada. It's out of Abbotsford, British Columbia. And it has 30 different country units. So there's Food for the Hungry Canada, Food for the Hungry US, Food for the Hungry Switzerland. And half that group is donor countries. And then the other half are recipient countries. So there's about 12 donor countries and about 18 recipient countries. And so we have Food for the Hungry Uganda and Food for the Hungry Vietnam and we have Food for the Hungry Haiti. So we work with Food for the Hungry Canada and we work in Haiti, so we work through Food for the Hungry Haiti. And so Haiti has people on the ground, about 25 staff workers, and they have people, so this woman in blue, she would be one of the Food for the Hungry workers, like officers, employees, and she works right in the communities that we work in. And Food for the Hungry has this amazing vision. They say they're about thriving communities. And what they do is they say, we have a vision, God called us, and we responded until physical and spiritual hunger is ended worldwide. So they work in 18 countries, and this time it's in Haiti. Their mission, a bit the same, is to walk with churches, that's both donor churches and recipient churches, leaders and families in overcoming all forms of human poverty by living in healthy relationships with God and creation. So it's a very, very Christian focus. And really, they say, it's not just about thinking good things, it's about doing good things and making sure that we're not engendering dependence. So they say our purpose is to end poverty one community at a time, and our promise is to graduate communities from poverty in 10 years. In some places in the world, that's a very ambitious promise. And unfortunately, in Haiti, it's an ambitious promise. So we're working in a couple communities where you see we might be 12 years, we might be 13. What does that mean to graduate? I'm going to tell you what it means to graduate a community. So what it means is that when you go in, you just don't sort of go into any community. A community has to say, you know what? We want to be a thriving community. Because if people say we don't want to be a thriving community, it's sort of like, that's not going to work because that's not the way the plan can work for us in developing community. And so what we do is we move that community from thriving, from stuck to thriving. And the only way you can do that first is by listening to the community and asking them, what are your hopes and aspirations? What are your goals? What are your assets? What do you have? What do you want to be doing better? What do you want to look like in 10 years? And so the first thing that FH officers would go in and do is say, so why do you want to be a thriving community? And you'd sort of think that would be obvious, but sometimes it's not. And sometimes people have never been empowered enough to take the initiative to discover what that is. And so once they've articulated what that plan is, then we can say, okay, let's make a plan. And sometimes some of the resources that are missing are not physical resources, they're actually planning resources, what we'd call soft skills rather than hard materials. And sort of say, okay, in 10 years, if you want to have 80% of your kids who have gone to school, then in year one, we better get a few people in school because we can't get them all at the end of year 10 in school. If we want to do that, we have to start now. But, oh, we didn't have any schools, so we'll have to figure out how that works. So you make a timeline. So it's a bit of like a project manager. And then the next phase of the project is to basically start doing the stuff. Partner. And that's where our dollars, when we do child sponsorship, that's where those dollars come in really handy, is because if the community says we need a school, and that's specifically what happens in Metaguays, then we start saying, okay, let's figure out how much money that is, how it's going to be built, who's going to be the staff, is it going to be sustainable into the future? And so that's where we'll start giving these project proposals, and the money will come in. Might be for farming, might be for health, might be for livelihoods. And ultimately, this is my favorite part. Celebrate. All right. When the community gets to the end, when they realize their dream, when they come to the end of their 10 years, they actually have a celebration. Now, I've never been to one of those in Haiti, but I have been to one of those in Uganda, and Bob has been to several in Uganda as well. And these are pretty incredible, because by the time the community has reached their goals, they say, yeah, it was really nice to have that help from Canada, but we did it. It's ours. And because it's ours, it's going to be sustainable and it's going to continue, and it is a marvelous thing. The one I went to in Uganda, and I think Bob had the same experience, they had people coming out from the village, stopped our bus, and they danced in front of it for a mile. We could only go the speed of the dance to get to the community. It was really quite amazing. And that's what we're really hoping for in Metaguays. Won't be next year, but it will be coming. So what is actually happening on the ground in Metaguays? Here we go. This community transformation is not a quick process. We focus on four different areas: education, food and farming, health, livelihoods, and we cut across each one of those with three other kinds of subject matters: emergency relief, gender equality, and care for the environment. Now, those are all words until you actually see them. Thriving communities has a lot to do with healthy kids. And it's important that we have an eye on healthy kids, kids that can cope with adversity, and kids that have a future because they're educated. So a lot of the emphasis goes in that area. This is why we put education first. And here, FH, through the contributions from child sponsorship, we're going to get to that in a minute, it's committed to working with teachers and community leaders so that every child is going to school. That's the goal. And so what's happened in the last few years, over 600 students, children, have now been sponsored by Canadian families, and 40 of those come from this Pine Grove and CEFO community. And those are people who now are going to school. They have an opportunity to go to school, and they're being supported by their parents, who have a better opportunity to have jobs that support the kids so that there's school fees. And we actually have a new school. And you heard about that from Marnie a little while ago, but this is what the new school looks like. And when we were there last year in November, this looked pretty dicey that it was actually going to happen. It was big. It was a big dream. And the dream was embraced by the community. And sure enough, So this is now a community, and we have those children who would not have had access to school, because unlike the schools here in Canada, schools are a bit like, I hate to use the example, but they're a bit like Money Mart. And the Money Mart pops up because somebody has an idea that there's probably enough money in the community that if I had a school, I could actually sell my services to get people to come to school so I could make a living. Not so much about them being educated, but about me being able to make a living. And so there are a lot of small private schools that are not private schools the way we would think of private schools, but they're kind of Money Marts. And then there are some very, very well-intentioned private schools that are run by churches, but they have no resources. So this kind of addresses the need of having good resources, good teachers, with an interest in the child being the center of the education process. Second thing is health. If you have a kid that is sick and can't come to school, then you're not going to be making many gains. But it's not just the kids that are sick. Sometimes it's the moms, and sometimes it's the brothers and sisters. And so healthcare is really a big emphasis in the FH Haiti program in Metaguays. And so it's really done by two different approaches. A lot of things that we would think of, just go to the doctor and get fixed, is not possible because there are no doctors. So there's a lot of work that's being done in community, neighbor to neighbor. And the two big concepts are cascade groups and leader mothers. So if you teach one mom how to do something like sanitation or toiletries or toothbrushing or those kinds of things, then you're going to be able to take that mom and she's going to go and have a group of 15 moms. And she teaches 15 moms. So she's a leader mom. And this is called a cascade group because it cascades down and down and down. And so the technology is to train the trainers, train the lead mothers, and then have the cascade groups. Then you have something else called model homes. And the model homes are to say, here's one home that is doing a really good job of this. They're doing a great job with sanitation. They are doing a great job with other aspects of preparing food and keeping, you know, food and animals separate and that kind of thing. So we're going to have tours. I mean, that's what they really are, is they're tours that come into your home and say, this is a really good way to do things. Why don't we try doing that in your house? So that is giving very good health outcomes. And then finally, mobile clinics. There are some mobile clinics that come through. And this year, 1,532 people were able to access those mobile clinics. And sometimes it's for something as simple as an infection, which left untreated becomes life-threatening. But if it's treated right away, it's kind of a non-event. So finally then, we have two other aspects, food and farming. This is really big in Haiti, my favorite part, actually. Not against education or health, just have a little predisposition towards food and farming. This is one happy guy with one happy goat. And one of the big things they've been doing this year, and we got to participate in this when we were there. Participate, actually, was a bad word because they let us participate for about 5 minutes and then saw we were getting in the way and said, just step back and watch. And that's the preparation of keyhole gardens. And a keyhole garden is this thing down the bottom, and it's about a meter high, about 3 feet high, and it has rocks all the way around, except for right in the center where it has this little keyhole where you can walk in. And that's so that you can have access to the entire planted area. It's a raised bed, and it is a good soil, and it has lots of organic matter. Because they put leaves and all kinds of stuff in the bottom, and then they put soil on top, and then they grow usually three or four types of plants. And that will largely support the entire family for a year from the products that comes, well, support, I mean in the sense of vegetable protein and stuff like that from the keyhole garden. So we have 37 of those built this year. We have 105 local farmers that have been trained, and we have 176 households who have received seeds. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the payback model. So we have 15 cows distributed and 51 goats from FH and the payback model. Payback model works like this. So let's say I give you guys a cow. You've always wanted a cow, right? So you give a cow, but I only give you a cow on one condition. And that is if that cow has a calf, you have to give the calf to Marcella. So then Marcella gets the calf, and she raises it into a cow, and she says, wow, I'm going to be rich because I'm going to keep all of the cows and all the calves. No, she only gets the calf if she then gives it to Kathleen. And before you know it, in about 6 years, everybody's got a cow, all right? So that's how that works. And it's been a model that's worked very successfully in the whole FH family. I'm not proposing that for Pine Grove, by the way. But anyway, livelihoods. And in some places around the world, this has to do, because they're not really agricultural communities, it'll be like sowing projects and beekeeping and accounting and all that kind of stuff. But in Haiti, most of the work, the livelihood work, is agricultural. So we have agriculture, beekeeping, animal husbandry. They do a lot of work with veterinary assistants to teach people how to care for the animals that are being produced and raised. But one of the other things that's really important is savings and loans groups. These are really exceptionally cool. So let's just say that we wanted to start a savings and loans group. What we'd do is we'd say, okay, anybody who wants, next Sunday, can bring some money. And let's say it's 15 cents, okay? So let's say Louise brings 15 cents. And so she'll put that into the pot. And then maybe Danny says, you know, I've got this great idea. I'm going to have a very fancy beef stew business. And he's going to make beef stew, but he doesn't have enough money to buy the beef. So he's going to make a loan, and he's going to pick the money out of there, and then he's going to pay interest until he can pay the loan back. And at the end of every 12 months, they completely cash out everything in there, so that if Louise put in 15 cents, she's going to get 15 cents plus all the interest on her 15 cents. So at the end of the year, she's better off because she's got more money, and he's better off because he's got a beef stew business. And that's been working in spades. Here in Metagues this year, they raised $11,000, which is big money, because these people are not people that have a lot of cash for a bank loan. So $11,000, 250 members. So finally, that's it. That's Metagues. That's what we do in Haiti. Not quite, because I haven't really told you how we do anything. Where's the community part? That's what they're doing down there. So here's where the community part comes in. I said that the whole mission of FH was around community transformation and around child-focused community transformation. So I said we start with the kids, and the kids are the focus of what is really going to be the future of that community. And so how do we get actually helping those kids? Well, in some models, and you've probably heard about these, I would actually say, well, my kid is, Theodore somebody, and I'm going to give him all the money, and he's going to be transformed. Well, you know what? All the money that I give that kid, if he just receives it, he is not going to be able to make a school. And he's probably not going to be able to hire a doctor. And he's probably not going to be able to buy a cow. So what we have to do is we have to get more of the money coming together to support the community. And so what we do in child-focused transformation is that Danny is going to pay $38 a month to sponsor a child, but he doesn't own that child. He doesn't directly have a relationship with that child in the sense that all his money is going to that child. No, the money's going to community, because missions are about community. And so what we have is we have a system where Danny's sponsored child will have access to all of the new facilities on sort of a priority basis. And he has access to the health services. And his parents will have access to the new farming methods and the new savings and loans groups. So there's a lot of sometimes misunderstanding about child sponsorship. And it's like, my child is doing this and my child is doing that. Yes, but he's doing it and she's doing it in a community way. And so if you want to become a part of that, I would love for you to come and see me, because I have 10 brand new children from Metagues, and you can find one that's closest to your birthday, and you can basically come up and talk to me about sponsoring one of these kids. And that's how the $38 a month is actually used to build that community. And think of it. It's less than a double-double a day. Can we afford to do that? I think we can. So in closing, I want you to know that last year we had 40, and so 40 of the sponsorship kids works out to about $20,000 came from Pine Grove. That's about not quite 10% of the funds that FH Canada sends to Metagrace and to Ketchumen. But it's really my goal that we would get up to 10%. So if you think about not wanting to have two double-doubles a day, then you could maybe sponsor two kids. So come and see me after. And I want you to tell you that it's kind of personal, because, let me just go to the next slide. It's kind of personal because this is a letter that Marnie got from her sponsored child. And it says, "Hi, dear Marnie, hello. I am very well with Jesus. I hope you are doing well too. It was nice that you didn't get snow. I enjoyed meeting my friends from your church. They really appreciated me too. My family is not too big. It's very cool now. And then we have a few rains. Thank you so much for thinking of me. I am glad to hear from you. When do you plan on visiting Haiti again? Merry Christmas." And then it's got her name at the end. So this is a child that Marnie got to visit. And this is something that we're planning on doing another mission trip to Haiti and Metagrace. And maybe this is the kind of community that God is sort of just pushing you a little bit to go beyond your comfort level and to see what this kind of extended community through missions might look like. Let's close with a prayer. May God be gracious to us and bless us and make his face shine upon us, so that your ways may be known on earth, your salvation among all nations. That means Jasmine, that means the emergency food cupboard in Gloucester, Ottawa, inner city missions, and even to the ends of the earth, to Uruguay and to Haiti. Amen.